Before E.L. James's Fifty Shades of Grey and Sylvia Day's Bared to You, there was Anne Rice's New York Times bestseller, The Claiming of Sleeping Beauty. It was 1983, and Rice first cast her gaze upon the traditional tale of Sleeping Beauty and wrote that book as erotica. Well, now the erotic series continues with Beauty's Kingdom, a fourth Sleeping Beauty novel by Anne Rice. Anne Rice is the author of many best-selling novels, including The Vampire Chronicles. Her first novel, Interview with a Vampire, was made into a film in 1994, starring Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt. Her other novels include the Mayfair Witches series, the novels The Mummy, Violin, Angel Time, The Sleeping Beauty Trilogy, and Prince Lestat, The Vampire Chronicles. It is a great pleasure to welcome Anne Rice back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
I'm delighted. Thank you.
What brought you back to looking at this traditional tale of Sleeping Beauty that you started so many years ago?
Well, I think, to be absolutely frank about it, it was Fifty Shades of Grey. Fifty Shades of Grey changed the public perception of erotica. The Sleeping Beauty novels that I'd written in the 1980s, which were pure erotica, had always been sort of an underground phenomenon. And suddenly, Fifty Shades appeared, and it appeared that men and women of all classes came out of the closet as people who enjoyed erotica and wanted to read it and write it. And people showed up at bookstores and lined up to get signed copies of Fifty Shades. Fifty Shades was a huge success. And without anybody really noticing it, the sales of the Sleeping Beauty trilogy greatly increased until finally the publisher did notice and did realize the times had changed, and the Sleeping Beauty trilogy kind of went mainstream. I mean, it was always an underground thing, and it always sold well year after year. It never gone out of print, nowhere near going out of print. But suddenly it was for sale in Walmart and Target. That had never happened before. And I noticed all this, and I remembered well the criticism of erotica in the 80s, that it wasn't politically correct. And I was very interested in all this. I was kind of enthralled to see that the perception of erotica had now changed and that women were completely upfront about enjoying it, writing it, reading it, not in any way ashamed of their erotic imagination or their desire to read a lot of different books in this genre. So I started thinking about the whole thing again. And I went back and I reread my trilogy, and I realized I had new things to say. It was sort of like if I were writing it now, I would have done this differently. It was that type of thing.
Right.
So what I thought was, okay, you know, write a new book and make the erotic slavery of the fairy tale kingdom consensual, and go at this again with whatever you've learned since 1980.
So time has intervened. This is not the book that you would have written 20 years ago.
No, I would have never, you know, this is a great, how should I put it, it's an enlargement of the vision. I think the Sleeping Beauty novels, they present you with a pornotopia, an imaginary fairy tale kingdom where beautiful princes and princesses, completely nude, serve the court of this kingdom of Queen Eleanor, and they serve as erotic slaves. And everybody really has a very good time in the books. They're meant to be playful. It's kind of like the theme park of S&M. Nobody is really ever cut or burned or hurt or has a disease or suffers an injury or dies. It's a fairy tale land where S&M is a game. And this new book really takes all that a step further, and it gave me an opportunity to go, I think, deeper into the psychology of S&M fantasies. I didn't want to hit people over the head with that. You know, this is meant for pleasure. But I, you know, if you write something with your whole heart and soul, I think you're going to go deeply into the human mind, no matter what it is.
It is, I'm going to editorialize for a moment, and then you can comment on my editorializing. But it is,
sure.
It seems, in comparison to Fifty Shades of Grey, to me, the big difference here is that this is extremely well written.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you.
And that is, of course, not a rare criticism of those books.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think 50 Shades aimed for something else. I think it's 50 Shades, the trilogy, are romance novels, really. They're romance novels with some kink involved. And I think they were very successful and very competently done for their audience. I don't think that the author was ever intending to do what I'm doing in the Sleeping Beauty
right.
trilogy. And I frankly think she made a lot of people very happy, you know. So I have no criticism of 50 Shades. It wasn't my cup of tea, but I can understand why people loved it.
What is it about the genre and your decision initially to write under a pen name?
Well, I wrote under a pen name for one very, well, two specific reasons. One, I didn't want my father to know about the books. And the other reason was I was known as Anne Rice. And though I'd only published maybe three or four books by that time, I knew this wasn't an Anne Rice enterprise. I knew that what I was doing was something very specific, and I didn't want Anne Rice readers to be picking up the Sleeping Beauty trilogy and be disappointed and upset and feel like they were misled. I wanted to do this. It was sort of like if you are a well-known musician and you want to try something new, you slip out of town and you go to a tavern with a stage on the outskirts of town and you try some new kind of music there in front of an audience that doesn't know who you are. It was a bit like that. Mm. It was a bit like, say, if a jazz musician wanted to go out of town and try rhythm and blues for the first time at a secret location. I wanted to write pure erotica. I believed in it. I really believed in the sexual imagination. I believed in the right of women to have their sexual fantasies and to write their sexual fantasies. And in the 80s, actually, people had turned away from erotica. It had been very popular in the 60s and 70s. There had been a real revolution, and Grove Press had published a lot of Victorian erotica. They published The Story of O, which came from France. They'd republished the Marquis de Sade, all of that sort of thing. But then the world sort of turned away from that. And if anything, militant feminism in the 80s was condemning of erotica, and with reason. I mean, I'm a feminist, and I understand why they condemned it. But I thought, well, let me try to write an erotica that's authentic and faithful to what those of us who share the fantasy really want to read, and I think I can do it so that it is not misogynist and does not victimize women. You know, I think I can, and that's what I set out to do, to write this authentic stuff that was just intended for pleasure, nothing else but pleasure, and would give people a safe place to enjoy dominance and submission without anybody getting hurt, without the real world intruding.
Maybe I'm reading more into this, but when you write a book, is it always in for some form of entertainment and pleasure for the audience?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, I early on I realized as a writer that I wanted to give my audience pleasure. I wanted there to be spectacle and plot and character and drama and tragedy. I wanted all those ingredients in anything I wrote. I have great respect for the popular audience. I consider myself a member of the popular audience. I've never wanted to be an elitist. I've never wanted to be only a literary author. I mean, I would love to have praise from literary critics, but that's not my goal. My goal is to write books that people really love, really enjoy, can't put down, and don't forget.
So when you were writing books about the life of Christ, interviewers like me, because I was one of them, would ask you, but Anne, you used to write erotica.
Right.
So now that you're back writing erotica, we say, but Anne, you used to write books about the life of Christ.
Well, what can I tell you, except that those books were as sincere as this erotica is sincere. I mean, my love of Jesus is in those books that I wrote, Christ the Lord out of Egypt, Christ the Lord, the Road to Cain. I think those are two of maybe the best books I was ever able to write. But I also believe that sex is good. I believe it's healthy. I believe it's a matter of ethics, not sin. And I think there's a place in the world for safe, consensual S&M fantasies.
Was there a time that you ever looked at the erotica that you had written with anything but some pride?
No, not really. I always took pride in it. I mean, I didn't. When I went back to the Catholic Church and when I tried very hard to live as a Christian, as a member of the church, a member of the Christian community. I didn't talk about my erotica, but I certainly wasn't ashamed of it. And I didn't think it hurt anybody. I didn't think that it did anyone any harm. I simply didn't talk about it because the subject is just too sensitive for most Christians. It's simply too sensitive. But I just didn't go there, but I was never ashamed of it. I was never ashamed of anything that I wrote. I'm not to this day. I mean, I've been writing for over 40 years, and there have been twists and turns in the road. And as I said, I think the two Christ the Lord books are two of the best books I was ever able to write, just in terms of craft and plot and character and effect. I think what I was aiming for there was the biggest challenge I ever faced in writing. And I'm proud of those books, very proud. I mean, Christ the Lord Out of Egypt will be a movie next year, and I'm very proud of that film. But I'm equally proud of my erotica, my vampire novels, my witch novels. I mean, everything really that I've done. Maybe I'm blessed that I don't have to live with knowing regret. I always take the risk, and seldom and almost never actually regret taking the risk. In fact, never, I would say.
This is anything but a political question. I do not mean that in any way, shape, or form. However, you made the point, and it's a good one, that now you look at your books and 50 Shades of Grey, and you can buy them at Target and mm-hmm. Walmart. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, as a national discourse, we seem to be more stuffy, right? We seem to be a little less adopting of different points of view I mean, this does play out on the political stage, that there is, mm-hmm. is very much a chasm between right and left. And I'm mm-hmm. just interested of what you make of that, of sort of what it is told of what we believe and how strong we have our beliefs, and yet what we actually consume.
Well, I think what I've seen in my lifetime is an expansion of human rights, and that human rights battle has been a glorious thing to watch. But the human rights battle is always going to involve a struggle with fervent people who want to do what's politically correct and want to say what's politically correct. For example, you get a huge uptick in the 60s and 70s in women's rights, but then you get militant feminists who don't believe women should read erotica or write it. So you have an expansion of human rights, but then you have people with very good intentions dictating that those rights should be limited somewhat by behavior. You know, you are legally, you've got the right to do anything. You've got rights you didn't have in the 50s, 40s, whatever. But suddenly you have people telling you that if you want to be an emancipated woman, you should not in any way write or read erotica, that erotica is degrading to women. Okay. You're going to have voices that are going to say just the opposite, like my voice. If you're really emancipated, you can read and write anything you want. Men have always enjoyed sadomasochistic fantasies. You can enjoy them, too. If you want to read a book about being raped by a pirate, you do it. You're free to do that now. And don't let anybody make you feel ashamed. So you're always going to have, in any struggle for human rights, you're going to have this question of the implications. And that's what we're seeing right now. We're all involved in a huge dialogue in this country where people, I think, are terrified to make any careless statement about sex or race or women or what's just or unjust, because you have an internet culture that's ready to play gotcha with any careless mistake you make and accuse you of being misogynist or against men or racist or anti-Muslim or whatever. I mean, it's an amazing time. But underneath it all and driving it all is the expansion of human rights.
And I guess what's so hard sometimes to figure out is that in the state of Indiana, where you have legislation that's been tweaked, but it was being bandied about that you couldn't walk into a bakery if you were a gay couple and have mm-hmm. a cake made for your gay wedding. However, you could walk into Target and buy 50 Shades of Grey.
Absolutely. Yeah, see, that's all part of it, the expansion of human rights. I mean, we've seen this incredible revolution in gay rights. It's been wonderful. The battle is being won for same-sex marriage everywhere much faster than we ever thought it would be won.
Right.
And you're going to have this backlash, this pushback, this I don't know, last gasp maybe of the religious right trying to block total independence and total acceptance of gays. And again, I see it all as good because I see it as the expansion of human rights. I think we will resolve this issue in Indiana. I think eventually it'll be unthinkable for any merchant anywhere to try to deny any gay person goods or services. You know, but we're going through the pains, we're going through the growth, and we see this pushback and this, for every move forward, there's some sort of little backlash going on. But it's just like you said, you can buy 50 shades, but you apparently can't get a cake for a wedding of a same-sex couple. But this is going to change. It's going to change. The great leap forward we made in the civil rights movement, where merchants, hotels, businesses all had to serve Black Americans, whether they wanted to or not, that great leap forward is still having good reverberations, and it will affect the cause of gay people as well. You know, very soon you will not be able to deny services to gay people anywhere in this country for any reason. That's really what most Americans actually want.
Anne Rice is the author of the new book, Beauty's Kingdom. Anne Rice, it's always a pleasure to speak to you. I thank you so much for sharing with us.
Well, thank you. I found the questions just great.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Again, Anne Rice's latest is Beauty's Kingdom. The book is published by Viking. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.